Some state lawmakers want to crack down on sex trafficking by cracking down on demand.
The sex trafficking is among very, very young girls, and a lot of them that are, you know, brought into this country to meet the fantasies and needs of these men.
Representative Dick Murie, his bill is one of several in the state legislature that aim to restrict prostitution and impose heavier penalties against those who buy sex. Murie's bill would let law enforcement confiscate the cars and money of people who buy sex, just like they do in drug busts. He says this will accomplish two things.
Not only will it make the buyers of sex think twice about doing it in the state of Washington, but it also, the revenues that we then get from that will be used to help fund rehabilitation programs and also the policing programs to do that. You know, it helps pay for the enforcement.
But some local sex workers say cracking down on demand won't stop trafficking. In fact, they think it could actually make sex work more hazardous. Mary is a sex worker in Seattle and a longtime member of the Seattle Sex Workers Outreach Project. Now, Mary isn't her real name. She used the pseudonym to protect her identity. Mary told KUOW's Marcy Silman, though new penalties would not be aimed at sex workers, they would still be bad for sex workers.
What we know about prohibition measures is that they take a black market and they push it further underground, which makes it much more difficult to access the communities, the services, the people who are involved. It doesn't address any root causes, and it doesn't provide services for the people who actually need them.
I'm curious if you can tell us of a particular instance where tighter restrictions actually impacted your work.
I actually am a very fortunate sex worker who has a lot of safety mechanisms in place. And what I have seen, a very specific example is, I don't know, it might have been 5 or 6 years ago, there was an unusual sting operation that happened in Seattle. Instead of the street busts or the hotels that are normally used in these operations, they used a high-end condo downtown on the waterfront. And it was something like 96 gentlemen were arrested that one weekend. And as someone who screens and verifies my clients, it was pulling teeth to get anyone to give me the information that I use to help ensure my safety and security. As someone who was in a more vulnerable position than me would have been subject to actually taking appointments that they were not comfortable with for the sake of paying their rent.
Mary, the Department of Justice says that thousands of people are trafficked into the United States each year and that a portion of those thousands end up in the sex work industry. If that's true, why shouldn't we be targeting sex buyers to stop this kind of sex trafficking?
It's not as simple as that. The black markets are notoriously difficult to study and analyze. And there is also a lot of conflation that happens and confusion about how much is migration, labor migration, and how much is, by the definition of trafficking, force, fraud, coercion. So I have seen many studies that just assume one and the same. So when you're looking at these large numbers of people who are trafficked, and then you assume that this large number are sex slaves, you're not looking at the scale of different positions of autonomy and power dynamics and situations that people are in. So what we're attacking is a small sliver. Instead of actually looking at the human rights abuses, if you look at domestic violence, sexual assault in this country, we have huge issues. And when we're looking at juvenile prostitution, which of course is the one that pulls heartstrings for so many people, we're not looking at what's putting the kids on the street. If you want kids off the street, keep them off the street. You're looking at abusive family situations. You're looking at poverty. And there's a reason a lot of us refer to that style of working as survival-based sex work. It's typically not a pimp who has kidnapped someone from the mall and forced them into sex work.
There are instances, though, of that kind of sex trafficking.
Absolutely.
But you're
Absolutely.
Saying that's not the majority of sex workers.
It's far from the majority. What we're talking about are human rights abuses versus a commerce and industry.
There have been a lot of studies that indicate that a large number of women who are in the sex work trade either were abused in this profession, trafficked, or would like to get out. What is your response to those studies?
You know, some of these things are so complicated. The first is there's a lot of bad studies out there. They are primarily conducted on the most vulnerable of the population. So they are getting their numbers from social service organizations, people who have been arrested, people who are actually already in such a vulnerable place that they are seeking assistance. This is the only population that you can get numbers on, because everyone else, it is for our safety and our security that we cannot be seen. And that is the problem that we're having right now. So there's a misrepresentation that this is 96, 97, whatever study you're looking at, percent of the industry. And that's a huge misrepresentation of what we have here.
I'm talking with Mary. She's a sex worker in Seattle, and she's a longtime member of the Seattle Sex Workers Outreach Project. Mary isn't her real name. It's a pseudonym that she's using to protect her identity. You've mentioned a couple of reasons that people might be on the street or in the sex work business. One is that they need to survive, and that's folks that are leaving a bad living situation, people who need to earn some money. So the escape, survival, and economics all seem like they're tied together. I'm curious how you got into this business.
I actually have had 9 lives already between hospital administration works, hair wraps at Grateful Dead shows, corporate accounting. I do extremes really well. And I kind of got into this work through my connection with both the sacred sexuality work and involvement with a gentleman who ran a private swing club. And they kind of collided at the same time. I was trying to figure out where my passion was and what I wanted to do.
Is it more lucrative or more satisfying than corporate accounting?
More satisfying, absolutely.
Not more lucrative?
Well, see, this is one of the benefits, is I am as lucrative, but I don't work 80-hour work weeks to get there. Satisfying, I'm very passionate about my work. I love my work, and I really adore my clients. And this is also part of the offense of what is happening, is painting all of these individuals, no matter their circumstance, as predators, as pedophiles, and as if they are themselves directly creating a demand for juvenile prostitution and human trafficking. There are so many social issues underlying this, and that's really the reason why it is absolutely backwards to target the clients of this. Instead of taking all of these resources, this time, these coalitions, all of these organizations, and coming together to provide safety nets, social services, and things that will prevent the vulnerabilities to begin with.
There are countries where sex work is decriminalized. How would that play out in this country, do you think?
Well, there's actually a lot of confusion in people's minds between decriminalization and legalization. So there's multiple models that are happening in other countries to try to work with these ideas. Decriminalization is simply the removal of criminal penalties that are around prostitution. And that in no way, and one of the misunderstandings of that model, that in no way removes any penalties for statutory rape, abduction, abuse of other people's. So I think one of people's fears around that is that essentially the world is going to explode in all of these abuses because now there's no regulation there. Legalization, on the other hand, is, and there's various models of this too. We see this in Nevada with the brothels there. We see it in other countries where there are licensing. It's treated as a labor issue, so regulated along those lines, occupational health and safety.
Would that work here?
I like to think it would, and I think it would free up a tremendous amount of resources to being able to find and address the underlying abuses that happen. Right now, with the criminal penalties, sex workers themselves and clients are not free to come forward to report abuses. There's a tremendous amount of fear, and that extends to people who are violently assaulted in their work.
Sex workers are pretty marginalized in this society. Clearly, Seattle has an organized group. There are groups around the country that are speaking out for the rights of sex workers. What do you think it will take for you to be taken seriously and be heard by power makers?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because sex worker advocacy organizations are not new. They have been around for decades and have been saying much of the same information for a very long time. And I think it's really going to take people to come forward and start talking, which, like I said, is very difficult because that's a vulnerable and unsafe position for this community. It's not safe to do. But it's going to take more of that. It's going to take more information, actually looking at creating studies that are more inclusive of the entire industry instead of narrowly focused on one segment, so that we do get really good information about what's happening. It's going to take people understanding the conflation issues and starting to tease apart what is trafficking, what is migration, what is abuse, to separate out everything that has been pushed together in this umbrella.
Mary is a sex worker in Seattle. Mary isn't her real name. She used that pseudonym to protect her identity. Mary is also a longtime member of the Seattle Sex Workers Outreach Project. It's a national organization working to end violence and stigma in the sex industry. She spoke with KUOW's Marcy Silman. This is The Record on KUOW.